Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political middle and have on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, and listeners, news is tough. We appreciate you sticking with us.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, it's great to be back.
You know, I was telling Shireen and John that I looked over our list of things to talk about today, and I'm just feeling a little down about it.
Yeah, just high level, why? What's upsetting
it
about
it? It just keeps coming. And I'm waiting for something that's not dealing with Iran, that's not dealing with, you know, economic risks, that's something that's not dealing with increasing violence,
yeah,
disunity.
You want some hope and optimism in the
yeah,
news.
I just want, you know, where's the good stuff?
Yeah.
And, you know, when the definition of news
the
is often...
The weather is beautiful outside.
It is. The definition of news is often that it's... You know, the things that are challenging the status quo.
Sure.
We don't
if
talk
it bleeds,
about
it leads.
Yeah, we don't talk about how many airplanes landed safely today, but there is a problem still in Iran, and it looks like this ceasefire is just completely falling apart. Today we have we're recording on Monday, but we've got warships that have been attacked, and we've got Iranian ships that have been hit, and UAE saying that they've had some trouble today. Oh, yeah. Oil prices spike, Shireen.
Yeah.
We've seen this before.
We've seen this before. And again, it's hard for me to talk about this without thinking, of course, of the human toll this has, what it's meant already in terms of lives lost for Iranians, for people on our side. We're actually having a really hard time tracking the exact number of troops that have been injured because the Pentagon is not a trustworthy news source at this point. We have, I think, a lot of people who are struggling in this country to afford the basics, healthcare, housing, that see this and are, I think, justifiably frustrated. And I think this is just, you know, making life for Americans a lot harder.
Yeah. John, if I put a political lens on this and I think about the midterms, what are we now, 4 or 5 months away?
Yeah, coming up in November.
Yeah, and you can't, as a Republican, want this hanging on our shoulders, a war that is...
As James Carville said, it's the economy, stupid. And right now, a lot of folks in the economy on the Republican side are wondering what's going on and why gas prices are so high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of them are saying, finally, after 47 years, somebody has the strength to go deal with Iran and solve this issue.
Yeah.
And others are saying, wait, I thought we were done with nation building around the world, and why are we in the Middle East again or still?
It seems to me like even just to agree to a resolution that's not totally in your favor, but get it done is in the favor of this administration.
Yeah.
That's just my gut feel. So
No.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because if the deal is worse than the deal Obama had, then it's a bad deal. And we've already painted ourselves that we can't. Any deal has to be better than that deal.
We're going to be lucky if we get something as good as the JCPOA. And to be clear, what we have now is a hardline administration in power, hardliners in power in Iran who are more extreme than the previous. We have no end
which
in sight.
Which is hard to understand given how hardline the previous
was, right? So this is an unmitigated disaster. This is a failure.
So, but my point is that I want to give as much time between this and the elections to talk about other things.
Sure.
And I guess, John, your point would be people aren't going to talk about other things. They're going to talk about what a failure this was. But if
they're still feeling it. I mean, if we get through summer and gas prices are down and things have stabilized, then I think it's a very different situation.
Okay.
So, but if it's still turmoil.
Yeah. So priority number one, get the gas prices down.
Yes.
Priority number
two. Because
that's
the thing people see every day.
Yeah. Priority number two is find a way to get yourself out of, untangle this, even if you don't get everything you want, because it's going to be bad for the party in the fall. And it looks like all three of us agree that it's not good for the party for this to keep going, for the Republican Party.
Republican Party.
Interesting. Okay. Well, then you've got...
And given how tight it is. I mean, we're usually down to a 1 or 2 vote margin, generally, depending on the day.
You've got this little insult, you know, game going on between the German chancellor and our president. And now the Pentagon's pulling 5,000 troops from Germany. That sounded like a lot, but then I read that it's only a 14%... drop.
It's a small number relatively.
I'm like, how many people do we have there?
A lot.
I have a brother that spent a good share of his career in the Army in Germany. So, I can kind of see that. I had a couple of nephews born you know, in Germany and that kind of thing. But this feels like a continuing fragmentation of NATO and of our world.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I am curious about what this means for, will there be fall-on effects? I think that there tend to be. So I'm interested to see, does this mean other countries will also sort of, will we pull out of them? Will we be disinvited from them?
So you take these troops out, but you also have a big request for $1.5 trillion budget request.
Let's talk about why the troops are there. I mean, this isn't about protecting Germany. This is about having staging areas for the U.S. to protect itself and to have influence around the world.
And I think to send a message to Russia with Ukraine going on.
To send
on,
a message to Russia, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I mentioned I didn't really like, you know, the run of play here. We also have Spirit Airlines who
ceased operations.
Yeah.
That must have been a big problem for a lot of people, the traveling public who had
if
tickets.
If you're stranded and
I was really happy, though, John,
The Trump administration was making a big push to get the other airlines to help those travelers get home at a reduced price of what they would be paying otherwise.
I was really happy to see that the Trump administration did not bail them out. I don't know how—I'm sure you've aligned with me there. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Shereen, were you aligned with us?
I thought it was a travesty that the Biden administration blocked the merger between JetBlue and Spirit. But no, I did not want to bail out at all.
Well, yeah.
Did you follow that logic? Because it seemed to me like a merger of those two airlines would not have compromised the competitive position of U.S. airlines. And it does seem to figure into this.
Yeah, I think that may be right. I don't know that I was paying close attention when that was happening.
It's fair.
But what I will say is I was traveling on Saturday and woke up to, I was not on Spirit, but I woke up to my flight being canceled and thought, I'm not going to get out of here because the news of Spirit had hit.
What airlines were you on?
Delta.
Okay.
And it was interesting because they had very clearly all over their websites exactly what you're saying, John. It was clear that people were looking for any flight that they could get home or wherever they're going. Yeah. And I do think that that, again, is just sort of a foreboding, I don't know, talisman, like a sign around all of the disruptions that we're having across our economy right now.
Well, and one of the key things Spirit Airlines said is, I mean, we know they were in bankruptcy, but it was the increase in fuel prices that was
took
the death
them under.
Knell,
that did it.
That did it so suddenly.
I also, as an economist, I'm glad that the American public figured out that when they say, oh, you know, I'm making up a number here, but 5,000 jobs lost with Spirit Airlines, it's like they're not lost. If there's demand for that travel, other ones will pick it up. It'll be fine. You know, it's not like the jobs go away and the need's not there anymore. So anyway.
Right.
Okay. If there was something in the last week that I got, I felt like put a smile on my face, it was King Charles' visit.
Okay. Why is this?
I just thought it was a fun reprieve from all of the political jockeying that we see, and you get
250 years later, he's back.
And he was funny.
Yeah,
you know, the Trump saying, "If we didn't help you, you know, you'd be speaking German," and then he says, "Well, if we didn't help you, you'd be speaking French." And I don't know.
I noticed that they were. You know what? Now I'm going to forget the word for it, but my understanding is they spent some time at the Beehive.
The Beehive, not the Utah Beehive,
At the White House, because they are bee enthusiasts.
Kind of fun. Yeah.
Well, and then, I thought the king is basically an organic farmer enthusiast.
Yeah.
King Charles III, I think it is, was only the second British monarch to address a joint session of Congress. And he had a lot of,
what did he say?
Well, he was very supportive of NATO and our partnership, and he really asked for our continuing support of Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
I think he got a standing ovation for that.
Yeah.
So.
And what else did he say?
Well, you go ahead. What did you want to highlight?
Part of what I read was a somewhat tempered chastisement of Congress that there's, you know, a reason for checks and balances.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting.
He talked about the rule of law.
Uh-huh.
You know,
so
it was
kinda
clever.
Kind of here it is coming back to lecture us a little bit on the Constitution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shereen, before we take a break, we also have Congress now voting to reopen Homeland Security. This is ending the longest ever partial shutdown.
Yes. So this, I think
Coast Guard's funded, Secret Service is now funded.
Funded, and people are receiving paychecks, which is an important part of this too. Mm-hmm. So there was some negotiation that made TSA agents paid, but a lot of people were still in limbo.
Mm-hmm.
So this is good. I think that there are just a number of pieces of what's been happening in this last week that really just show the dysfunction that we're seeing, whether it is, I think, for a person concerned about surveillance powers of the United States, the House also voted to extend the surveillance powers under FISA, which was something that bothered me when it happened the first time, but apparently our, you know, congressional delegation is good with it.
It was
the ability to wiretap Americans in a way that you don't like.
I don't
right?
like that. Yeah. And then I also know.
Well, the key thing is surveillance on foreigners. Mm-hmm. So, but
if they're talking to Americans,
the kicker is Trump opposed this, and now Trump
good with it.
Called for the reauthorization.
Yep, that's right. So I don't know. I just think that there are many sort of elements of what's happening here that are confusing, that sometimes put us at odds with what we expect from certain political parties. I'm sure nobody likes to be chastised, but we really do need to get our act together.
Okay. Let's take a short break, and then we'll do the Voting Rights Act and what's going on in southern states. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourvani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shereen Gourvani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. Shereen and John, southern states are now scrambling to redraw the congressional maps. This is after the Supreme Court did their latest ruling on the Voting Rights Act. John, I'm looking at you because I already know what Shereen's going to say.
I'm like, I can't believe you didn't say gutting the Voting Rights Act. That's what they did. They gutted the Voting Rights Act.
So you've got Tennessee and Alabama calling state lawmakers into a special session. This is a lot of mischief, you know, intersensal mischief, like to be doing this now.
Are you talking Supreme Court or are you talking about the redistricting?
Redistricting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say the Supreme Court ruling I don't think is mischief. I think from their perspective, they're basically saying the reasons for discriminatory actions in the past have changed. We are not as a racist country as mm-hmm. we used to be, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to elections. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we shouldn't artificially discriminate in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
If there is indication of you're gerrymandering based on race and being discriminatory, then this would still apply. But otherwise, it goes out.
I love your legal training here, John, but this is what you just said, that reverse discrimination is no longer okay.
In essence, that's what I read. Unless it's blatant.
Mm-hmm. So this is
because you can redistrict for other reasons, but basically they were gerrymandering for mm-hmm. certain reasons, and it was interesting to hear some folks talk about gerrymandering's bad, except for in this case gerrymandering's good without being that explicit.
And you know, in the political middle, I can see both sides of this. I actually can, Shereen, but let's hear your side.
Well, I'll just say, watch Tennessee. Tennessee only has one district that is majority Black. They have a large population of African Americans in that state. They are going to dismantle that district. It will be gone. And that is just the exact
example. For racial purposes or for partisan purposes?
Both. So that they can take every seat. And that, to me, is
I see that as partisan.
Okay, you can. But I think what I just have to have us stop and pause for a second at is that the racial disparities continue in this country. There are real economic disadvantages for people of color in this country. There are real health outcomes that are worse for individuals of color in this country. That has not gone away, and in some key areas has actually gotten worse. And I just the fact that we're at this point just makes me question, what is it going to take to get us back just to a place where we have fair districts that are not drawn through partisan gerrymandering, through the dismantling of the Voting Rights Act? We had more competitive districts when the Voting Rights Act was fully in place.
Let's do one more kind of national piece. This is state of Maine. This is a state that I've lived in before, and I love Maine, right?
Yeah.
When I say lived in, that's a little bit of a stretch, but I spent summers there when I was in college. I worked at a girls' camp.
I spent
camp.
About 30 minutes there.
I taught tennis. I was a tennis counselor at a girls' camp. But you've got the Maine governor. Her name's
Things
Janet
we
Mills.
Learn about Natalie.
Yes, I know. I just am learning
summer
this
camp,
for the first time.
Tennis coach.
I'm like,
there
do you
go.
Still play tennis?
I'm more of a soccer player and skier, but
I knew that.
My family, I grew up playing tennis. My folks love tennis.
Okay.
Anyway. All right. So this Governor Janet Mills, she is, campaigning as a Democrat for the U.S. Senate. She's dropped out, which now paves the way for Graham Plattner to win the nomination.
Yeah.
This is the person that will challenge who?
Susan Collins.
Susan Collins.
That's right.
Yes, so it's a big deal.
One of
it's
those
a big
you
deal.
Like.
Yeah, yeah, she's a moderate political center. But this is interesting because this Graham Plattner is of the ilk of Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. Sounds right down your alley,
yeah,
Shereen.
Like okay, so he's a. I would say he comes from an interesting. This race has not been easy. It certainly brought up some very questionable things he's said online over the years, but he is, I would say, falls squarely into a working class populism on the left that I'm very interested in. And to see somebody actually making a strong argument for working people in Maine who is not 80 years old brings a little joy to my heart. Yeah. I'm concerned about the gerontocracy, and I'm excited that we have a younger candidate.
Well, there's a balance of power issue here, John, because you could say that Susan Collins is pretty much votes with the Democrats a lot.
Oof. No,
she's a swing vote from my perspective. She's a very squishy Republican. She's there occasionally on critical Republican issues, but she's also, like you said, but I look and go, okay, I got somebody that Elizabeth Warren who just kneecapped Spirit Airlines basically, and Bernie Sanders who has some of the worst policies I've ever seen. Okay, these are the folks advocating.
And I'm sorry, what did you want Elizabeth Warren to do with Spirit Airlines?
Let the merger take place.
Let the merger take place.
Let JetBlue and the merger take place.
I
rather
see.
Than
so
going back to the Biden administration that she was.
Okay, but she did not make that decision. That decision was not in front of her.
She was hard for advocating for that thing. So.
As if this isn't tough enough, but we got to talk data centers, you two.
Oh, here we go.
And this is the big local news this week. And, you know, we have
careful,
to be careful
because this will air till Thursday.
Let me just give a couple of opening
this
comments.
Is the big
let you guys,
one yeah. up in Box Elder County.
Yeah. And right now our state has 48 operational data centers. That's a lot. We have, I think, 7 or so under construction. These data centers are what fuels modern economies, right?
It's powers the internet, and we all depend on the internet.
You use your
doesn't
phone,
matter what it is.
You're using a data center. You know,
you buy something at the grocery store. You used a data center.
Yeah. Either of you toured ones before?
I have not.
I've been through small ones. You know, years
I've just
ago.
Been through two big ones, but they're big and they're mighty.
And this
and
one
they're
would
the
be
future.
Even bigger.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this one. This is, we're heading up Box Elder County way.
Well, I'm not sure. I feel like you might have better information on sort of the ins and outs of it, but it is being referred to as a new hyperscale data center. The thing that has stood out for me is that the residents of Box Elder, who I am pretty sure aren't paid protesters, are showing up at the county commissioners' meetings expressing serious concerns. And the one of the commissioners said in a vote that was supposed to take place last week they were going to delay because this had basically shown up on their desk the week before.
Mm-hmm. Big decision.
Big decision. And I just have to say, I think this is really, I'm proud of that person for saying that. I'm proud of a little bit of pushback and slowing it down. It does show that in some places in our government in Utah, people are still responsive to the constituents that they serve. But I was really disappointed to see Governor Cox's tone and tenor in his response to this. I felt like it was deeply misunderstanding how Utahns are feeling about issues like water, what gets approved, what doesn't. The fact that there are sort of day-to-day concerns, right? They can't find housing they can afford, but we can somehow find the power and the will to create a hyperscale data center.
The quote from Governor Cox was, "I'm so tired of our country taking years to get stuff done. It's the dumbest thing ever."
Yeah.
And, you know, my guess is he felt like that's a little inartful and he might say that a little differently. But to his point, it does take forever to do things, and
well, this is
we lose
the,
a lot of value when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I describe it as we used to be an engineering country, and we would build big things, and we would build them relatively quickly. One of the downsides is we didn't necessarily think about the impact on local communities.
Yeah.
Now we've become a legalistic society where the legal system is designed
to stop things.
To stop things.
Yeah.
So we've gone too far the other way.
Yeah. This program is a story of overreach. Every week we talk about things that have been overreached.
Yeah.
And so when you look and go, okay, we need data centers in America. And too often it's relatively quick to build things in China versus here. And I think the governor is just trying to say we've got to speed up the building of it. But I do understand that we need to also be sensitive to certain things. But I look at my friends, my liberty-loving, property right advocating folks that are freaking out about a data center. And it's like, if you were talking about any other, you know, business or neighborhood or whatever, we wouldn't be this wound up about it. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, okay, energy usage. I hear people talking about the impact it's going to have on our grid. What's a standalone energy Data centers going to produce its own energy.
But do you not on that point think they take, so they're going to take natural gas from a pipeline that goes there, but do they not take energy that we could use for some other purpose?
Well, they're building their own.
Yeah, but could we
not,
but could we use that natural gas to serve municipal needs?
No, I'm talking electricity. I'm talking electricity.
I know, but natural gas is what makes electricity.
Hang on a second. Okay. I was talking electricity. It's not tying onto the grid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, natural gas, we can have that discussion about pricing and everything else like that. There is some impact for that. But are we going to say we're not going to build this neighborhood because of the natural gas impacts or other things like that? We're going to look to produce more. So then we can talk about water. And clearly we live in a desert. So we have to be sensitive to our water usage. But farms and residences and others generally consume more water than a data center does. But we can talk about how to cool a data center without, you know, significant
water loss.
Yeah. And there's lots of things we can work through. So rather than just say no, 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 let's look at the issues, let's look at the concerns, and let's try and identify ways to address it. Because at the end of the day, we're going to want data centers. Some people get wound up about what data centers mean, but it's just a tool that can be used for good or ill, depending.
And I would just say our governor saying that this is the dumbest reaction ever to me is a absolute abdication of his responsibility to take the time to slowly and carefully have this conversation in a way that builds trust. That is lost when you start calling people dumb.
Yeah, this is one to keep an eye on because this is going to be the last controversial data center project in our state. This happens to be
last?
A very large. It's not
it's
going
not
to be.
Going
oh
to
no,
be.
Not
yeah,
going to be.
Not
okay,
going to be the
I'm
last.
Just going to say what? What?
Yeah, and this is the new world that we're living in, and we have to, you know, political middle. We got to figure out a way to do both. We got to figure out a way to have the water and power and pricing that we need for residents and for new growth. And this is part of the economic future of our state.
And I think we need
and
leaders
the national
who can explain
defense
it.
Future of our state. By the way. You want to know a data center that uses a lot of water? It's the early ones. It's the national security, the NSA one.
Yeah.
You know, those are early ones that use a different cooling system. Now they've gotten better.
Better. I will just also make the plug for on all the things that you listed that use water. You failed to mention golf courses, which we seem to be cool with, and are some of the biggest wasters of water.
Shireen, so we got the Utah Supreme Court. You've got 5 members of the Supreme Court. The legislature's now bumped it up to 7.
Yeah.
You've got a judicial nominating committee.
You've got 2 vacant seats.
Yeah.
You've got a nominating committee that sends names off to the governor. And I think right now their list has 12 names on it.
You don't
they
like
have
the
something
list.
In common.
You don't like the list, Shireen.
There's not a single woman on the list. And
but we now have a majority in the Supreme Court that are women.
I think
3 out of 5.
When these lists, when these lists come forward, it would be nice to see some gender parity in that body of candidates.
Yeah.
And I think that that would be a good practice for any open seat. So the last 2 have had no women on the list.
So, and before that, it was kind of skewed women. But why is this? This nominating committee, why? Is
it, a good question.
Is it applicants that women aren't applying or what's going on?
I will just say this. I think what is important to point out is that the reason we have 2 more seats on our Supreme Court is because this legislature is very frustrated with the fact that the Utah Supreme Court continues to look to the Utah Constitution and decide that Utahns may have rights, whether it comes to making decisions about their bodies and their future, maybe access to clean environments or fair districts. And so what is happening here is a court packing process, and that is what we should be concerned about. Just to say that we've had very fair courts to this point. We've had very reasonable judges.
But that's
to this
not
point.
The issue we're talking. We're talking.
No, but
why
I just have to
women...
point that out because that's why we're here. That's why we're here.
Yeah, can I just say though, I think they're looking at merit. I think they're looking at outstanding attorneys that are worthy and lower, you know, district judges and whatnot that are worthy of this. But you know, it's nice having women.
It's just nice having a mix of candidates.
What I take more issue with, though, is that, you know, we always do these retention votes for the Supreme Court. And we've got the Utah Republican Party calling on Utahns to
party chair.
Yeah, to not support Diana Hagan and Jill Pullman. He basically said, go find a job in the private sector. We don't want you anymore.
Again, these are just attacks that are coming from a very political place because some on the right in particular are very frustrated that these judges, this court, has really looked to our Constitution to make decisions. And what they're going to have to do is change the Constitution if they stop liking the outcomes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, though, is a retention election is a valid process to not retain judges and justices. Mm-hmm. So that is part of the process.
It is, for sure. Hey, we just
But I just want to be clear. It was the party chair and not the whole party taking a vote like that.
Fair
That's
enough.
True.
We just have 30 seconds in the program. I just want to say to my 2 co-hosts here, Loved the graduation speeches. I thought our state did really well. Arthur Brooks was the commencement speaker at the University of Utah. He challenged all of us to lead with our weaknesses, our vulnerabilities. And I just want you to reflect on that for a minute, because I usually think, you know, lead with your strengths, but he was basically saying that when you're vulnerable, you lead.
Oh,
it was a beautiful thing. So
I just want to talk the bright future of all these students coming out and what they're going to do and you know, all that.
Yeah, congrats to the grads.
My daughter graduated.
Congrats.
Hey, programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Hey, thanks everyone for listening.